At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Elizabeth Peak, who writes a column at The Hill and at Fox News, much on Fox Business, to deal with the global recovery. That is apparent from the markets behaving these last weeks. Now that we're past July 4th, the global recovery is driven, of course, by the vaccine. And the countries with the luxury of the vaccine and high vaccination rates, especially double vaccination rates, are where we look to lead the recovery. That would be the United States and Europe. A report in the Wall Street Journal, global stocks were mixed on July 4th holiday. That was 24 hours past. With U.S. markets closed for the holiday, futures pointing to a muted trading session at the open Tuesday. I announce now that the trading session is muted up. It's muted higher because we're looking now at discounting the profits over these next 6 to 9 months. In other words, we're reaching into those with imagination into 2022. Liz, a very good evening to you. The news to me is that Europe, despite the Eeyore nature of European leadership, has decided that there are moments between the rain clouds and that they might be entering a sunshine moment here in the summertime. The UK, for example, is announcing date certain of reopening everything, no more mandates, and for those vaccinated, no restrictions whatsoever. Europe, eager for British tourists, are looking to make amends for the questions of how can you demonstrate you're vaccinated. But I see Germany, I see France, I see even Italy, Liz. Italy is looking to revive the economy. That has to be good news here. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Yes, Europe is finally catching up, and I think that's the way to look at it. They were slow to distribute the vaccines. They put all their chips on one vaccine, and then they had a hiccup with that, the AstraZeneca, as you probably recall. So it took a long time for them to roll out vaccines the way we have in this country. We are now really pretty clearly approaching herd immunity, or whatever you want to call it, as we are now looking at between people who've had COVID and people who've been vaccinated, probably between 75 and 80% coverage. So America really has been in the vanguard of accepting the vaccines, developing the vaccines, and getting the shots in the arm. So bully for us. And it is, by the way, kind of an interesting commentary when you look at the EU, and we all sort of chide or are critical of the bureaucratic nature of the EU. I think this is a perfect example where, guess what? It matters. And it did matter. It has slowed their progress. But now, as you have pointed out, the economies there are beginning to pick up. And like here, they are beneficiaries of substantial, not just monetary largesse, but also fiscal spending. All the countries in Europe have been spending pretty aggressively, though not as aggressively as the United States, to boost demand. So, yeah, Europe looks good. I'd say the one country that weirdly is showing signs of slowdown is China. And, of course, that is incredibly important to the United States and to Europe. Our biggest trading partner by far is China. And it's a little hard to figure out why that's happening. I think part of it is intentional. I think the authorities are worried about inflation. They're worried about an economy overheating. So they've taken some steps to rein things in. But, you know, other than that, and a couple of other countries like Singapore, really the whole globe is recovering from the pandemic. And yes, it all goes back to the vaccine, without which we would still, I'm sure, be arguing about it, but a lot of the country and a lot of the world would still be in lockdown.
It's earnings season, so I want to look to what can go wrong and why. Why not? Let's do some ER for ourselves, all right? What's good about it? U.S. oil prices retreat after hitting 6-year high on OPEC standoff. There is a feud in OPEC. What's new there? Nothing. However, we are paying more at the pump. Now, it's summertime. It's driving season. We didn't have one in 2020. People are eager to travel. The mask question is up in the air, but people seem, at least the part of the world that I can observe, people seem confident driving without masks and mixing without masks. I mean, for heaven's sakes, when you can enter a Home Depot and there are no masks to be seen, you know people are comfortable. Okay, fine. However, does this mean that we're going to see gasoline prices leading in as an indicator of the strengthening economy and that old bugaboo inflation? Can we now count on the fact that inflation will be checked once the first wave of the first surge of the recovery is underway?
Well, there's a lot of debate about that. And I think what's troubling is that you're seeing certainly commodity prices continuing to go up. The price of oil is not the only commodity that's seeing higher prices. Copper has begun to rise again, and the Bloomberg Commodity Index continues to go higher. So, yes, there are some commodities like lumber, which had a tremendous pullback after reaching untold high levels, unprecedented high levels. And copper certainly is down from its high in May. But the truth is prices overall have continued to go up. And the oil price, as we remember from the 70s, is insidious because it's part of everything. I mean, oil translates into plastics prices and home heating prices and all kinds of other, after effects, if you will, of higher oil prices. Now, yes, there is a feud in OPEC. It's a little unusual this time between the UAE and Saudi Arabia. That doesn't really happen often, but it is symptomatic of a longstanding OPEC problem, which is that everyone wants a bigger piece of the pie. That kind of goes without saying. But really at the end of it, the real push to oil prices is that demand is increasing. And despite all the efforts of the Greens, green politicians around the world, the truth is our consumption of oil continues to rise. And so with it right now, we have a higher price. I think the more troubling thing, because that could well back down. In fact, today oil prices are off. I think the more troubling thing to me is what we're seeing in wages and incomes. The way inflation gets into a sort of an unpleasant spiral is when wages go up because workers demand higher wages because prices are going up, and then that begets more price increases down the line. And that's what we're seeing. I think the most notable statistic from last week was General Mills talking about how in their earnings release, talking about how they're seeing inflation of 7%. This is a big multinational company. They would not say that, casually. And their comment was that they were going to be raising prices to offset those cost increases. I think people should take comments like that very, very seriously, because I think this inflation, this higher cost of everything is sort of moving into our economy in a pretty pervasive way. And I'm not sure that the Fed is ahead of it. Now, the other thing, John, is a lot of people are saying, well, I'm not worried about inflation because look at the price of the 10-year Treasury bond, which is now down again. It's down around 1.4%. And people are taking that as a sign that no one's worried about inflation. I think more and more economists are coming around to the point of view that the Federal Reserve is distorting the bond market so profoundly with its $120 billion of asset purchases every month that we have no idea where that interest rate would be if the Fed were not pumping all this liquidity into the system. So, and I kind of agree with that. For months, I've been looking at that and saying, I'm not sure that's the measure we should be looking at. I'm not sure that's the yardstick that really tells us where inflation is. And I would tell you that now that's becoming more talked about. And I think we're going to hear more about that also from the Federal Reserve.
We're spending the money we saved during the pandemic. I think the number includes that big T word, trillions. It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And the money is pouring into consumption. That's what we know how to do. When in doubt, shop. Now, that is a positive for all of the earnings reports we're about to get and for the rest of the year. Does that continue? Is that based upon the government stimulus, so-called stimulus packages. Really, Liz, I understand it was a big number for the government to give away, but it's not a big number for considering the savings that the consumers have. So the absence of government stimulus, if that's what it comes to, you know, there's no certainty here, and we'll talk of that in a moment. Does that mean that the consumption will continue? Because any moderation in consumption would give strength to the Federal Reserve to delay action.
Yeah, no question about that. And we've seen a couple of soft retail sales reports. Remember, the last couple of months have been a little disappointing. But the answer is, I think people are spending money on other things. For one thing, John, there's indication that we've seen a huge increase in retail investing. I think a lot of people are taking some of that $2.5 trillion of excess savings that were on consumer balance sheets at the end of the year and buying stocks. They're buying cryptos. They're buying meme stocks and all of that. I think the Journal had a big story on that today or yesterday. There's been a big increase in retail investing. And frankly, that's not always a good sign.
It's never a good sign, Liz.
I don't want to be harsh, but the truth is retail investors at the end of the whip.
To March of 2001, Liz.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's some truth in that. I agree.
But in any event, the earnings demonstrate that the investments are not foolish. There are a lot of companies that are going to report good earnings on the basis of consumption. So a puzzle that no one can answer, but what the heck, you've got a crystal ball there with you. Our consumption, is it driving the recovery, and must our consumption be sustained for the recovery to be sustained? Can we tell?
Well, I think you're right. The consumer is the biggest part of our economy. You can't really have our recovery without it, 70% or something. And the consumer, again, is in really, really good shape, both low end of the income spectrum and high end. The low end has been puffed up by a lot of handouts from the government, the $1,400 checks most recently, before that $600 checks, and the child tax credit, which, you know, people haven't really focused on, but it's gigantic. I think it's supposed to add something like 1% to 2% of GDP growth in the second half. So that's a big number. The answer is, I think consumers are going to continue to spend. And, you know, also worries about inflation sometimes lead people to spend now versus postponing purchases because they're worried the price will go up. That may be a small influence in spending. But overall, yeah, I think people are going to continue to push this recovery. Companies are doing very well. And to your point, that is really at the end of it what drives stocks. Now, you know, there's a lot of noise right now about inflation, interest rates, and so forth. But the bottom line is, until S&P earnings turn down, probably the stock market is going to be pretty okay.
Liz Peek writes a column at The Hill and at Fox News. We're going to turn to the 117th Congress when we come back. And also, back to work. I'm beginning to sound like an older person. Back to work. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.